Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports. And have the fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs.
And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/begin. That's blogtalkradio.com/begin. And you can send email messages to the show at goforitgan@gmail.com. And you can also follow the show on Twitter at goforitgan. So make sure you follow us on Twitter. Make sure you listen to the show, because we're going to bring it to you week in and week out. Expected to be joined by host of Picturica on the Hop Network, Corey Almeida. Corey's going to talk about his beloved Pittsburgh Steelers, and Corey also has an American Idol exclusive that he wants to talk about. And so make sure you stick around for that, because Corey is a warm-up host for American Idol, warm-up host for Dancing with the Stars, and warm-up host for other shows as well. And so Corey's a busy man, but Corey's going to stop on by, and he's a big-time Steelers fan, and he's going to talk about his beloved Steelers. And also, the great Willie Rofe, 2011 Hall of Fame finalist. It's down to the wire for Willie, and Willie's going to come on and talk about it on here today, and Willie will join us in the 2 o'clock hour. And as always, Jeremy, how are you today?
I'm melancholy, Paul. You know, I reached the end of the line, and I didn't exactly, you know, I didn't think they needed to or deserved to reach the end of the line.
And whatever that means, I'm really not sure what you mean by that.
Well, you were ripping Mark Sanchez all week, and you had fun doing it. It's your national pastime to rip somebody, a young player, a developing player who certainly was not the reason that the Jets lost.
How was his first half?
Well, his first half was as good as, if not better than, Ben Roethlisberger's first half.
Okay, but yes, it was. But his first half was good. How was his first half?
His first half was better than Ben Roethlisberger's.
That's not really what I asked you. That's really not what I asked you. Mark Sanchez's first half?
It was fine, Paul. In my opinion, for a guy to come into the league second year in a row, and for him to play conservative football in the first half, I don't think, again, I just don't think, Paul, you can get upset with Mark Sanchez in the first half. I think you have to look, the first half, Mark Sanchez did not lose that game, period. They did not lose that game.
Let's look at Mark Sanchez. I'm looking at the game log right now. First and 10 at the Jets, 27, Mark Sanchez, incomplete pass. So let's go. He does complete a pass on 3rd and 10 to Jericho Cotchery, 14 yards, gives the Jets a first down. A penalty on the Jets, 1 yard gain by Sean Green, then another incomplete pass by Mark Sanchez, but it was a penalty on Ike Taylor, so it was defensive pass interference, so play doesn't count. Anyway, LT, up the middle, 1 yard. Next play, Sanchez, incomplete pass to Ben Hartsock. Next play, pass short to Jericho Cotchery for 3 yards. And, again, that was third down, so they didn't get the first down. They were forced to punt. And they didn't get the ball back, and that was the end of the first quarter. So first drive for Mark Sanchez, not really that great.
Paul, but
and,
I don't think that he had to be. What about the running game, Paul? What about the, you know? I mean, your goal to bash Sanchez. Listen, and I'm going to say this: the Steelers certainly in that game, and I'm sure you recognize, Paul, the Steelers were not overly impressive. I mean, they really were not an impressive team. If you're going to dog Sanchez the way you're dogging him, they really did. You know, if I were them, I would be a little bit afraid walking into the Super Bowl then.
Well, if I look at this also, I mean, Sanchez didn't have a great game, but either than Ben Roethlisberger. But guess what? When it was time to make a play, when it was time to roll out and complete that pass to Antonio Brown for the first down, would essentially salted the game away. Guess who made it? Ben Roethlisberger made the play. When it's time to make plays, the guy makes plays. And that's what he does. And it didn't help, which I talked about, Rashard Mendenhall. He would have a good game. He rushed for 99 yards the first time these two teams played. He had 121 yards this time. But so he was effective. He was very effective in this football game. And that was probably one of the biggest reasons they won this football game, was the effectiveness of Rashard Mendenhall. And he definitely chewed up a lot of clock for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They held the time of possession against the Jets by almost 10 minutes. So they ran the ball effectively. And I'll give Mark Sanchez a lot of credit. He fought hard and gave a valiant effort in that second half and tried to lead the team back. But when you can't continue to fall down 24-0 in these games and expect to win. You can't expect to come back from a 24-0 deficit, especially against these Pittsburgh Steelers. It just doesn't happen like that. It just doesn't happen like that. So give the Pittsburgh Steelers a lot of credit, but also in terms of their defense and in terms of their run game. But in terms of Mark Sanchez and his play, I mean, everybody talks about, oh, he played well in the second half and he wasn't the reason they lost. And there might be some proof to that. Obviously, the quarterback is not the main reason you win and not the main reason you lose. But also, if you look at it, that first half that he had was not good. And you can say
Paul,
what you want, but he didn't play well in that second half. That first half, excuse me.
I am not here. I told you, I'm not going to disagree. He did not play well, period, in the first half. But I also just – I think that the Jets' offense and I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think you're not going to agree with me. I think the Jets' offense, except for Sanchez, didn't play well. I think Sanchez wasn't put in the right position because they couldn't get their running game off to a good start. You know, I think that for all the hype that is Braylon Edwards, you know, I thought he has come up small his entire career. I thought he came up super small against a team where I thought he could have been a difference maker. He has the size to be a difference maker, and in a big game, you're always looking for him to come out and take control, and he never has. And that's why I say, I think to me, Paul, you know, there's a lot of other reasons that to me the Jets should have won. They should have won into that locker room, and I agree with you. You can't go into a championship game down, you know, the kind of points they're down and expect to come out in the second half against a defense like the Steelers and come up with a win.
Well, and if you look at the remaining of their drives, meaning the Jets, especially in that first half, second quarter, three and out, another drive in the second quarter, three and out, and another drive in the second quarter, which led to the fumble, was subsequently led to the touchdown. And at that point, it was 24-0. And then finally, they had the drive at the end of the first half where they got the field goal. And they came out in the second half and got the touchdown. And they played good football in that second half, Sanchez did. But in that first half, I mean, I'm looking at these drives in that first half, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, their first five drives of the football game, 29 yards and a punt. 7 plays, 29 yards to the punt, 3 plays, minus 2 in a punt, 3 plays, 3 yards in a punt, and 3 plays and a fumble, which led to a touchdown. And that was the first step for Mark Sanchez. So we can talk about, okay, what he did in the second half, and we can say that it was not all his fault. And granted, it is not all his fault. It's not anybody. It's not one player's fault when you talk about a football team. But if we want to talk about championships and winning championships and being a championship caliber quarterback, at this stage of the game, which I have stated throughout this whole season, I started in the summertime, I stated throughout this whole season, he is not a championship caliber quarterback at this stage of the game. Now, that could change, but what people fail to forget, yes, he could be a top-notch quarterback. What people fail to forget, this defense may not be good next year. I mean, this defense, I think it will be, but you never know. You never know. The NFL is a week-to-week and a year-to-year league, so anything can happen. And so what I'm saying is, hey, Sanchez could be off the charts next year, but guess what? The defense may not be as good. And so it may not. So it has to all come together. And at this stage in the game, the Jets have a championship caliber defense. They have some. There's players on offense in terms of Edwards and Santonio Holmes, LT, Sean Green, Dustin Keller in that offensive line. It's championship caliber in my mind. But at the quarterback position, I think is where this team lacks. Just the way I feel at this stage of the game. But it could change, and I think Mark Sanchez will be a very good quarterback in this league, but not right now. Not right now, and I think the last 2 years have shown that. The last 2 years have demonstrated that this guy is just not a championship quarterback.
So let me ask you something, Paul, because if you're saying you're proclaiming he's not a championship quarterback, so it's time for the Jets then to draft another quarterback.
No, I'm not saying that. You're misunderstanding
what I'm
saying.
Let me just get a couple of yes no so I can box you in and we can kind of see that. Well, here you are.
Sure, you're not going to box me in, but sure.
Well, we're
going
to box you in because the ultimate goal Rex Ryan has said is to win a Super Bowl, and Paul.
That's every team's. That's every team's ultimate goal.
And you're not winning a championship. Paul Gant says you're not winning a championship with Mark Sanchez, right?
No.
So then it's time to release Mark Sanchez, right, Paul?
At this stage of the game, during this season, you're not winning a championship with Mark Sanchez. He's not good enough. No.
Oh, so you're backstepping.
Let's get away from all the yes and no's and let's get some clarity here. Let me clarify.
Okay.
For whatever reason, you seem to be, I don't know, you just don't understand. So let me break it down to you. Maybe I need to go slower. Should I talk slower? Should I try to talk a little slower? I mean, let's break it down this way. Okay. In terms of Mark Sanchez, at this stage of the game, the last two seasons, the Jets have traveled to Indianapolis. The Jets have traveled to Pittsburgh. In those two times, Mark Sanchez could not make enough plays for this team to ultimately get to the Super Bowl. He could not make enough plays for this team to ultimately get to the Super Bowl. At this stage of his career, he is not a championship caliber quarterback. Michael Jordan, year one, in terms of an NBA player, at that stage of his career, he was not a championship caliber NBA player. Kobe Bryant, at his first year in the NBA, he was not an NBA championship caliber player. At this stage of the game, yes, defense wins championships, but guess what? I've always said this, and I continue to say this, quarterbacks win championships too. And guess what? Mark Sanchez, son, you're not a championship quarterback yet. Yet. And the key word is yet. Do you understand a little bit now?
Well, now, because you backstepped, and you did it gracefully, and I appreciate that. Backstepping and half-stepping is what Paul Gant's all about. I mean, I'm going to tell you, Paul, you're going to absolutely positively have to start recognizing Mark Sanchez as a quarterback of the future. And I'm going to tell you right now, Paul, because time constraints will not allow this debate to continue, I'm going to be able to get the last word in. It's rare. It's a rare
word.
You know it, Paul. Jets.
Well, let's go to a guy who is kind of excited and happy that the Jets are gone. Let's go to the guy who's pretty excited about it. We are now being joined by the host of Picture Rico and the Hub Network, and also the warm-up man for American Idol and everything else, Corey Almeida. Corey, how are you, sir?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
Doing great. We had you back on a few months back, and it's good to have you back. And
It's good to be back.
Now, Corey, your Steelers, they've done it. They're in the Super Bowl. What was your initial reaction when you saw Antonio Brown make that first down catch and you knew that your Pittsburgh Steelers were headed back to the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was doing a gig. I was at a gig, if you could believe it, for DirecTV that Sunday. I was all excited because I was like, you know what, I can finally – it's a 3:30 game. Church is over. I could be home and watch the game. And then I get a call from DirecTV. They're like, can you DJ and MC our leadership meeting tonight, Sunday night? And I'm like, what time? And they're like, 2 to 10. So I was like, perfect, of course, right at game time. But then I figured if I'm going to be doing a gig for anybody, that like DirecTV and the NFL are like, you know, hand in hand with each other. So I said to myself, if I'm going to do a gig for anybody, then at least it's DirecTV, and they might have the game on. And I got so hooked up because they had the game on a flat screen right by my DJ booth. So I got to watch the whole thing. I had the terrible towel draped over my DJ booth. But there were a lot of Jets fans there at the DirecTV conference, so I had to be careful because I wanted to work again for them. So I had to be very careful. But I did wave that towel a bunch in the first half. Second half, different story. I was a little nervous, but we pulled out. That was huge. I mean, you know, And you know, I know Tomlin has said it, but it really is. And this is kind of how we did it the year we stepped up and beat Arizona in the Super Bowl. You know, rookies stepping in and making big plays. Because Santonio Holmes, you know, Santonio Holmes had a great postseason. Not a great season the year that he caught that Super Bowl championship winner in the end zone. But he came up huge. You know, you look at that and you look at these young guys who are stepping up. And that's what I love about Steelers is that they can just plug these cats in. Like, we lost Antonio Holmes, traded him in the off season, and so we let him go. But these guys, Mike Wallace's, the you know, Emmanuel Sanders, Antonio Brown, they stepped up and they're making big plays. But that obviously biggest play of the year because and Ben was rolling out, running to the short side of the field, so he's running out of room. You know,
right.
and that's just a recipe for disaster when you start taking it to the short side of the field because you try to force balls where you shouldn't force them, and a pick right there would have been just a nightmare. So he stuck it in there, and when I saw him come up with the ball, it was just I had that towel. I was running all over everybody out there at DirecTV. So it was big. It was really big, and especially because I'm going to be working for DirecTV out there at the Super Bowl. So the fact that I'll be out there, my team's out there, it's like the perfect storm for me.
It sounds like the best of all worlds for Corey Almeida.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Now, Corey, let's look back at the Steelers playoff run now. And I want to start with the Baltimore Ravens game. You guys are down 21-7 going into the third quarter. Horrible first half. Lots of turnovers. Just sloppy play. At that point, was Corey Almeida thinking that the Pittsburgh Steelers playoff run was over?
Well, you know what? We went to. It was so funny. I was here in L.A. and I have a buddy of mine who's huge Steeler Nation too. So we're down in Hollywood, and I'm like, dude, I'm gonna grab you. We're gonna go see the game at this one location. I show up, the location's closed down, gone, doesn't even exist anymore. So I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So then I'm like, all right, we go to another location. It's closed for a private 9-year-old birthday party. It's a bowling alley, this Lucky Strike, which is like one of the popular like hip bowling alley. I'm like, really, a 9-year-old birthday party on Divisional Sunday? So that was not good news. And then I said, you know what, we go to the Hard Rock. The Hard Rock's got to have the game on. I went in and I was like, do you guys have the game on? And he was all, what game? I said, I got to go. I literally, so we were scrambling. So my buddy's like, I got this, I know this great spot, great sports bar, so we'll go to it. And, I mean, you know, the Steelers travel well. They travel really well. There are a lot of Steelers fans out here in Southern California. You can almost go into any bar or any kind of, like, you know, sports restaurant, and it's going to be diehard Steelers fans. I mean, I saw people on Hollywood Boulevard with helmets, the whole nine. Well, my buddy managed to take me to the one Ravens bar in all of the West Coast. So we end up in there, and it's like Ravens country. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me right now. You know, and we, I mean, we spotted them 21 points. That's how that went. And
yeah,
so I looked at my buddy at halftime. Now, the food was great. The food was good, even though I could barely eat after the first half of the first quarter. I couldn't eat anymore. But I looked at my buddy and I said, yo, we got to flip this script. We got to get out of here. This energy is not good. We got to take this to another place, and we got to make things happen. So we bolted. We bolted at halftime from our spot. And we ended up at a theater that you know we've worked at in the green room, just him and I. We said away from all the distractions. And the second we got there, boom, like it just started happening. So I mean, I don't want to say that we're completely responsible for the Steelers coming back and winning, but I do feel that us flipping the script and getting involved in a different energy sent them some good positive vibes, because we were like, once we did that, it was on. You know, so I don't think I ever felt the season was over. It wasn't looking so great. But, when we came out in the second half, I mean, and that's what the NFL is all about. It's about, can you make those adjustments? Because teams are going to come out and teams are going to get breaks. And it's about making the adjustments.
It was almost like a reversal.
Exactly.
It was like a reversal, pretty much.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to say. You saw the Jets do the same thing. They went in at halftime. Good coaching staffs. If you make the postseason in the NFL, you're a good team. You know what I mean? Even the Seahawks at 7-9, you know, God love them, they still want a playoff game because, you know, you've got to be able to coach on the fly, and you've got to have a staff that can go in and say, okay, we're getting our heads handed to us here. Let's change this up. Let's throw a different look here. Luckily, we got out just in the nick of time against the Jets. We got the big first down when we needed to, and that's what we couldn't do against the Ravens in the first game that we played the Ravens this season when Batch was in there, and it was the third game of the season. We had the game won. We just could not get a first down. We had to kick to Baltimore, and you know the rest is history, you know, them scoring with seconds left. So that's what didn't happen in the third game of the season. So it was good to see when it's all on the line, you know, the AFC, the conference is on the line, we came up big. So, you know, a few heart attacks, a few mild heart attacks. I've probably lost a few years of my life just in this playoff run, and I think that this Super Bowl is going to be no different. I think it's going to be a great Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a slugfest out there. I think it's going to be real good.
And you talked about your Steelers and their comebacks. And we got a point at Ben Roethlisberger, who led the big drive against the Baltimore Ravens. And, I mean, this guy just finds a way to get it done. He didn't put up big numbers against the Jets, but when it counted the most, he got it done. He's in line for his third title.
Yeah.
Do you think Big Ben gets the recognition he deserves? And that's mainly, we're talking about all the off-the-field stuff, but say what you want to say. This guy's in line for his third Super Bowl title, and he's only 28 years old.
Yeah, yeah. His third in 6 years. I mean, that's insane.
Exactly.
I mean, just to go to three Super Bowls in 6 years, I mean, there are players in the league who have never gone. You know what I mean? You look at a Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez is, I mean, he's Hall of Fame material, and he's never gone to a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? You look at people like that, and, you know, then you look at this guy. Now, you're going to sit, I mean, and it's really a different category, because when you put him in a category of a Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, numbers-wise, his numbers aren't going to be off the charts like these guys. But when you talk about winning percentage, and when it's on the line, and you talk about, like, you can't, on paper, you can't put down pressure-filled situations and how guys come through in the clutch. You can't put that down on paper. There's no number, you know, that you can sit. You can sit there and say Peyton Manning's had, you know, 4,000-plus yard passing years, and, Drew Brees has had two, and Tom Brady's had four. And you can look at all that, but when it comes down to it, like you said, this guy just finds a way to win. And, you know, and sometimes
–
would you say?
It's definitely not pretty.
No, it's never pretty. It's never pretty, you know. But then again, you're talking about the Steelers. You know what I mean? I think they wouldn't, you know, the Steelers in the city of Pittsburgh wouldn't want it any other way. They don't want a pretty boy, you know. They just want a slugfest.
Right.
You know, and let's face it, they're built on defense. They're built on running the ball. They always have been. And now you've got a quarterback that when push comes to shove and the game's on the line, we can put the ball in his hands and say, get this done. We couldn't do that with Bobby Brister and Neil O'Donnell. You know what I mean? We couldn't do it. They couldn't get it done, but this guy can. So, I mean, when you look at the sheer fact that, I mean, he wins on Sunday. That's 3 rings in 6 seasons. That's sick. I mean, how can you not consider him? You know, I mean, you look at Trent Dilfer, who won with the Ravens that year, and they always talked about him being a quarterback that managed the game. He managed the game, and he did, but he had to come up with plays. You know, they still scored points. They still have to move the ball on offense. You know, he's not lights out, but, you know, I think you know, Roethlisberger's a few steps above that the Dilfer style, but in the same way, that's how he gets it done. And he knows, guess what, I can kind of go for this because I've got a defense that's number one in the league consistently,
right,
and these guys are going to back me up. I mean, they stopped the Jets first and goal on the 3-yard line. They had 4 cracks at the end zone, you know, and they couldn't get it in. Now, Ben went and, you know, fumbled it. Luckily, he jumped on it, and they only got a safety. But you're talking about a defense that is stout, and I think that's what frees it up. But I don't, you know, for me, I'm not a guy that's like, man, Ben deserves more recognition. I always prefer flying under the radar. You know, I don't, because when you sit there and you list the best quarterbacks in the league, okay, you got Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers. What are they all doing next Sunday? They're all watching the Super Bowl.
Good point. They're watching Big Ben.
So when it comes back to it, they're all watching the Super Bowl. You know, and on the other side of the coin, I think Aaron Rodgers is just, I mean, he's emerging, and I mean, he's had a come-out season, and he had a come-out season last season, but this year to really do what he's done, his playoff game against the Bears was not pretty either, you know, not
well,
a pretty game at
wasn't
all.
Pretty. Definitely wasn't pretty.
Yeah,
and
he's a
stud too. Aaron Rodgers. He's playing out of his mind right now, and the Packer defense is playing some good football right now too.
Yeah,
but Corey, I mean, going into this Super Bowl, got to be a little nervous.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, there's the X factor, you know, and I think you've got against each other. I think offenses and defenses match up pretty well. I think you know, I know that Chicago gave them a tough time, but I still think Pittsburgh brings a little more heat, and they you know, they lay the lumber a little bit more than Chicago. So I think they're going to face a D in Pittsburgh that they've not really been accustomed to, but I think they have the weapons to handle it. And I think we got to deal with Raji. Raji is a beast, you know, and Raji can disrupt a lot of stuff in the backfield. That's who I'm worried about. But honestly, I think special teams is going to be a huge part of this game, and we have not been great on. That's what scares me the most of everything. I'm confident with our defense. I'm confident we can put points on the board. Special teams is that you know, that just hangs over your head. It's that X factor, and special teams has always scared me with Pittsburgh. That is the one thing that I can say, you know, I'm leery of. Every time we kick off that ball and, you know, either punt or kick it, that's when I'm getting nervous, because we have you know, and it's been proven in the past, we have not been a great special teams ball club. But, you know, if we can weather a special team storm and get through that, I think, you know, I think we've got so many veterans that are going to this game, and Green Bay's, you know, a lot of their kids are first timers in this big game. And you know, I know it's said over and over again, but man, there's something to be said for going to it the first time. It's a whole different atmosphere. You know, everything is under a microscope.
And
it's the biggest stadium in the world.
Right. And Big Ben's first time. He didn't play too well.
Big Ben had a quarterback rating of 22. I think his quarterback rating was 22 in that first game against the Seahawks. I think that was his quarterback rating, was like a 22.
Thank God for Randall L.
Thank God. Yeah, exactly. Thank you for that. We'll take it. It's going to be good.
We're talking to Corey Almeida, host of Picture Rica, warm-up host of American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, and Live to Dance, which airs on TBS. Now, Corey, last time these two teams played, it was a wild affair. It was a shootout.
Yeah.
The Steelers got it done last-minute fashion. Can we or should we expect another shootout this time around?
I don't know that it's going to be a shootout this time. I think, you know, you're looking at a couple different units, even though some of the pieces are the same. A lot of them on the other end of it are different, on Green Bay's end, and I think they've stepped up. I think it's going to be a tighter game. You know, you might be, you know, I don't know if you're going to look at 37-36, but you might be looking,
right.
You know, it might be mid to high 20s. You might be looking 27-24, 27-21. But, you know, for me, I don't care if it's 3-2. As long as the team with the 3 is black and gold and not green and gold, I'm good. Although I'll take a little bit more of a cushion. Exactly. You know, and that's what I'm saying. This is the number one song in the world. How can we not win? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Black and yellow is everywhere you go. We got to win this thing.
But I want to hold that up for a little bit right now, Corey. But with the Green Bay Packers, when I watched this team, the last two games of the season was essentially a playoff for them. They fought their way into the playoffs. They go to Philly, get it done. They go to Atlanta, blow out the number one seed. They go to Chicago, and they also find a way to get it done. Destiny's Child in Green Bay?
I don't know. I can't see that. I can't see it happening. It just hasn't entered my brain yet. Because, you know, I sit there, and that's kind of how the Steelers did. You know, that's how they made their run. You know, when
right.
when we took it that first time, you know, we went into Cincinnati, took care of them. Went into Indianapolis, took care of them. So it's you know, we were that sixth seed that made it happen. So I'm sure they're feeling it on their side too. But unfortunately, we're going to have to rain on their parade.
And so, Corey, I mean, you're not concerned. Marquise Pouncey may not play. Any concerns there?
Well, I look at it this way. I mean, Pouncey's a beast. Let's just be straight up. I mean, Pouncey, I mean, to
right.
step in and I know you've played ball, right, Paul? You played ball growing up. Did you play football? Yeah. And I'm not sure what position, but you're aware. I mean, the center position is not a position to slouch. That's no slouch position, because you're essentially
exactly.
The center is the quarterback of the line. The center is calling out all the blocking schemes, calling out, making sure everybody's got a helmet on somebody. So that center is a huge responsibility. And the fact that this rookie has come in and just played at a Pro Bowl status is unbelievable. When you look back at the Steelers' history of centers, you know what I mean? They're a team that has you know, had a history of some pretty stout
Mike
centers.
Webster. Jermonte Dawson.
Thank you. See, you know the list. You know how it goes. And you don't have to be a Steelers fan to know that. That's what it's all about. But here's
right.
where I stand. I mean, our line, I mean, we've been, I think at one point we had someone from a Pop Warner team playing right tackle. I'm not sure, but I think so, because we haven't had the same offensive line from game to game. We've had to switch it up
right.
so many times. And, I mean, obviously, with Pouncey in the game, I feel real good because Pouncey's great. But I'll tell you what, Ligurski came in, and Ligurski still played strong for us. And Ligurski's been all over that line. He's played tackle. He's played guard. He's hopped into center position. So, you know, Ligurski's going to have to carry the weight, and that is the matchup. It's going to be Ligurski against Raji, which is going to be, you know, that's going to say a lot, because I think they really
you got to say advantage Packers there. You might have to say advantage Packers in that situation.
I definitely think they get an advantage. They have an advantage there, because Raji's playing lights out right now. So for us,
right.
it's like, okay, we got to keep someone back. So if you pull Heath Miller off the line for max protection on Ben, then guess what? You lose one more guy, and a crucial guy, in your short yardage passing game. You know, a guy that gets it done over the middle, runs these slants or these outs, and comes up with big-time catches and big-time yards after the catch. So, you know, that definitely bodes favor to the Green Bay Packers. So that for sure gives them a little bit of an edge on that particular part of the checklist. But like I said, for some reason we've been able to swap in linemen, and you know, I don't know how they've been able to get it done. But again, just finding a way to have more points at the end of the day.
Corey, can we get some of your keys to this big game?
Well, I think, like I said, key number one, special teams. We've got to really hunker down and make sure that our kickoff and our punt teams are solid. I think tackling, you know, something as basic as tackling, is huge. I think what happened with some of these other teams is they made initial contact with players on both sides. When you're looking at Atlanta and Chicago with Green Bay, and then Baltimore and the New York Jets with the Steelers. I mean, Mendenhall, there was one run, I think he broke about six tackles. They couldn't wrap up. So I think wrapping up, I think Polamalu has to be a huge, huge part of this game. We haven't heard his name called much this postseason. I know he's been dealing with injury, but he's got a whole lot of time to rest after this game. So I think Polamalu's got to be a beast, and he's got to give Aaron Rodgers a fit, you know. And I think Polamalu, the Polamalu Woodson matchup is pretty significant. Gosh, it's all across the board. But I feel like, you know, everybody always says you just want the team that turns the ball over the most is gonna lose. So the team that can cause more turnovers and that can protect the ball more in a game like this is gonna win. But I'm gonna go back to my first statement and say special teams, special teams, special teams. You know, be it kickoff and punt or field goal team. You know, I think that's gonna play a big factor. Everybody's talking about, you know, Aaron Rodgers playing lights out, Ben running and getting the job done, these strong defenses. But I think special teams is gonna be huge in this game.
And so, Corey, well, hold on, we'll get your prediction in a moment. But we want to go back to your hosting, and you're the host of Picture Rico on the Hub Network, excuse me.
Yep.
Check your local listen for that time and your local area. But how is the show going?
The show's going great. Actually, it's so funny. I was doing I was working, as you said earlier, I was working on Live to Dance. I work on that, and I actually there was someone in the audience at Live to Dance, and they were like, You're the host of Picturica. My daughter loves your show. So it's great when it's not like, you know, when it's not your family or friends' families that you've made watch this show every single day of the week. You're like, watch it, DVR it, watch it again, make sure you record it. But when you get it from strangers who just happen to fall on the network and who just happen to watch the show, it's really telling that our show has got some really strong validity to it and some clinging power where people who are watching it are loving it. And really grabbing a hold. I have a buddy back east, and I was talking to him, and he's got a little boy who barely mutters a couple words, but at the beginning of the show, he always says, "Here's Corey." It's a little disheartening that my son, like some of the first words he said are, "Here's Corey." He's like, he goes, "You know how much that destroys my ego as a dad?" But it's good. It's you know, the show is great. And you know, like I said before when we were talking a couple months back, it's a real fun show. It's a family show. The network is a family network, and that's what I'm all about. I'm about, you know, promoting positive family entertainment, you know, and staying away from a lot of the quote-unquote reality that's on there that's not really reality. But, you know, I like to, so that's why I'm really happy about this show. I'm really excited. The network is real happy with what's going on, and it's continuing to grow every day. The network is getting bigger and bigger, so they're thrilled with it. And right now, we're just looking at where we're gonna place the season two pickup, where we're gonna start that, which we're hoping to get a word on that soon, and then hopefully go into season two, because a lot of people have been asking us, how do I get on the show? How can I be a contestant? Which is also a good barometer of how your show's doing, if people want to be on it.
Definitely.
So network's real happy, and I'm real happy, and things are going great with that. And, you know, and a ton of other stuff is happening, which is really good. I'm in production on a couple other shows that I'm working closely with some great production teams. Again, like, one is a very cool youth empowerment show that I'm really excited about. And then the other one's just kind of like, you know, it is a little bit of a reality show, but it's kind of, it takes you behind the scenes and looking at certain aspects of, you know, events and stuff that you wouldn't really know about. So it's kind of behind the scenes type stuff, but not, you know, too crazy and out of control. So there's some good stuff on the table right now. And this year is just kind of picking up where last year left off. There's a ton going on. So we're, you know, really happy, and things are cranking right along.
And now, Corey, you go from Corey Almeida on Pictorica to Corey live as the warm-up host of American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, Live to Dance.
Correct.
How exciting is all that? I mean, you're a busy guy. You're everywhere.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think, you know. I mean, I'm from Rumford, Rhode Island, this little town in Rhode Island. And most times I tell people I'm from Rhode Island, and they ask me what state that's in. People don't realize that Rhode Island is a state because it's so small. But it's kind of crazy when I sit back and I look at the amount of shows I do, and B, the shows that I happen to be a part of. And, you know, I mean, I just sit back and I go, man, I'm blessed, because to be able to be a part of one of those shows would be great. Never mind being able to go from Live to Dance to American Idol to Dancing with the Stars to So You Think You Can Dance to America's Got Talent, and then in the meantime, shoot my own show. It's unreal, and it's, you know, it's something that I have to pinch myself, because being from a small town, a kid who loved to talk his whole life, and now I actually get to do it and get paid for it. It's really amazing. It is exciting, and it's especially exciting this season with Idol, because they're making so many changes over there on the show. And
tell us about those changes.
It's going to be an exclusive for you. It's going to be exclusive for Go For It, Paul. This is really kind of, you know, people don't know about a lot of the changes, so I'm going to drop some on them right here with you. So
we're
going to get the exclusivity. But well, obviously they've moved. So they've moved from Tuesday Wednesday to Wednesday Thursday, which is a huge move. They're taking out those weeks in between where they used to have the rounds of eight. And they would continue to whittle them down on the smaller stage before they went to the big stage. We're looking at after all these auditions, getting 10 guys and 10 girls to perform. You'll get a 10-guy performance. You'll get a 10-girl performance. America will choose 5 guys and 5 girls, and then each judge will pick one. So you'll have a top 13. So this season, you're going to get a top 13. And so you're only going to get one of those little rounds in between, you know, that whittles it down to who your top hits the big stage. So you've got the 10 guys being knocked down to 5, 10 girls being knocked down to 5, and then your judges each get one. So you have your top 13 when we hit the big stage. And when we hit the big stage, it's bigger than it's ever been. They're adding another 150 seats to the studio. So we're looking at about 800 in the live studio audience, which is going to be bananas. The stage is totally different. They've revamped it. So now you're looking at all of these, you're going to be looking at guests and audience members all behind the stage. So where the band used to be, where that big American Idol door was that would open up and everyone would walk out of, that whole platform above it and behind it is going to be full of audience members. So it's essentially going to be in the round. The whole show is going to be surrounded. The contestants on stage are going to be surrounded by fans and by audience members and guests who want to see the show. And then lastly, we've got the band is going to be hidden on platforms that are going to slide out. So the platforms are going to mechanically, automatically slide out to position when it's go time, when they're playing. Then when the routine ends, they're going to slide away. So it's the set is very intricate, and it's going to be bigger. It's you know, obviously they've remixed the title track of the show, so they're doing more with lighting. But I think those are the biggest changes, is that you're not going to have a ton of those weeks in between when we see like the top 40. Normally we'd have 40, and then they would whittle those 40 down to your top 12. Now you're just going to get 20. And you're gonna, in 1 week you'll have 20, the next week you'll have your top 13, and boom, then we get into the 12 weeks. And, of course, adding those extra seats gives an extra 150 people a chance to get in and see the number one show in the world when their ticket number's called. So it's going to be exciting. A lot of energy there, a lot of big energy. So,
And of course, you're going to bring it. You're going to bring the energy as well.
Got to do it. You know what I mean? Got to do it. So the hype man will be in the house.
And now, Corey, let's get back to the game now. We got to get a prediction before you get out of here.
I know. I think I'm going to stick to I think we're looking probably 27-24. I think it's going to be close. I think they're, it's not going to be super high scoring, but it's not going to be low scoring either. I think both these teams will open up a little bit in the beginning. I think it might be tougher. Points might be tougher to come by for both these teams in the second half. But I look like I look for both these teams to come out on like blazing in the first half and really put some points on the board. But I think at the end of the day, I got to go with the black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow. And I got to say 27-24, the Steelers, number 7 championship, number 3 for my big man, Big Ben.
Will you get MVP?
I think Ben's due. I think Ben is due. I think he's, you know, the first, I understand the first Super Bowl quarterback rating was terrible. I think he got stiffed a little. Now, granted, Santonio made that amazing catch in the corner of the end zone, but someone had to put the ball there, you know. So I felt like, and honestly, I don't even think that was the play. I think it was the play where he had his, one of those Cardinals hanging on him, and he threw across the field to Heath Miller for a huge first down on that drive. I think that was the big play. I can't recall if it was a 3rd and 10 or a 4th and 10, but it was a major play before he even had to throw that pass to Santonio Holmes. So I think Ben's going to come up big. So you got 27-24 Steelers. Big Ben gets the MVP and terrible towels everywhere.
And you definitely will be at the game.
I'll be out there. I'll be screaming.
You're doing some work for DirecTV, Celebrity Beach Bowl, so you'll definitely be out there. So
yeah, I'll be out there. We're going to be hyping it up for the DirecTV Celebrity Beach Bowl. That's an annual thing now they've been doing for past 5 seasons. The day before the Super Bowl, they're actually bringing in 1 million pounds of sand, and they're building the biggest outdoor stadium tent in the world for this event. So it's going to be huge. It's going to be pretty major. And then that night we're going to be I'll be rocking it and opening up for Usher, who's going to be some entertainment that night before the game. And then, of course, at the game, we've got Christina Aguilera singing National Anthem, Black Eyed Peas halftime show. Couldn't be better.
Is this your first Super Bowl?
It's the first Super Bowl. Yeah, it's the first Super Bowl for me, so I'm pretty psyched. I'm actually flying my pops out, surprise him for for his birthday. I'm flying him out to Dallas, and we're going to go to the game.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun. I'm excited.
It sounds like, Corey, you're going to be a busy man at the Super Bowl. And it sounds like, Corey, judging by your prediction, you're going to be a happy man at that Super Bowl.
I hope so.
And, again, you can catch Corey. He is the host of Picture Rico, which airs on the Hub Network. I'm hard time saying that. And
yeah,
it airs 4 o'clock Eastern Time, 1 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, so make sure you check Corey out there. And, again, Corey's the warm-up host for Dance with the Stars. Corey is the warm-up host for American Idol. Corey is the warm-up host for Live to Dance. So Corey Almeida is a busy man, and that's a good thing in this economy. Corey, we definitely thank you for stopping by, sir. It was greatly appreciated, and as always, you're always welcome back.
Paulie G, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It's always a fun time getting to chat and have some fun with you. So, yeah, anytime you want me, I'm back because I love being a part of it. So thanks for having me, man.
Corey, thank you, sir. Corey Almeida.
Take care. Have a good one.
Corey Almeida. We are now being joined by the host of Picture Rico. Corey Almeida did a great job, and he's excited. He's definitely excited. And
Paul, sitting through me again being put on mute because you can't be a proud Jet fan. It's tough, you know, to sit there and think, in my opinion, I thought the Jets probably, and we talked about this the week before, you know, last week, I thought the Jets were going to play a much better game than they did. I thought that was probably one of their worst offensive outputs of the season. No, the Jets. I mean, I agree with you, Paul. I don't think the Steelers played a good game. I think both defenses played really well. But I have to admit, I was very impressed to watch the Steelers on that last drive. Because that last drive, to me, sums up how good their offense really is. And I'm man enough to say that. I think in the last drive of a game, when you know if you don't stop – because the momentum was clearly in the Jets' favor there. The Jets, I believe, would have probably scored again. But to watch Roethlisberger and the Jet offense just basically manhandle, a very, very, very a prominent top-flight defense in the AFC Championship game like that tells you, I thought, a lot about their offense.
Well, the Steelers offensively did not play well. But guess what? In terms of what happened with the Jets, if we look at the first half, 7 plays, 29 yards, punt. 3 plays, minus 2, punt. 3 plays, minus 3 plays, 3 yards, punt. 3 plays, fumble, touchdown, Steelers, and now you're down 24-0. Those were your first 4 possessions for the New York Jets. So you can't win that way. You cannot win that way. And say what you want to say about Mark Sanchez in the second half. You can't win that way.
I agree. I think the one thing that if I'm a Jet, I think the one thing I learned, especially about this season, and I think you would agree, they had many ebbs and many flows in and out of this season, period. I think there were games that they played horrible in. And I look at and I say to myself, you can't play well. You know, you can't expect to be an AFC championship or Super Bowl team and have that many ups and that many downs. I think they did well, but not good enough, period.
And you're right. I mean, this also brings up another issue in terms of the Pittsburgh Steelers, not the Pittsburgh Steelers, the New York Jets. Last 2 years, you had to go on the road for the whole playoff. What you have to do now is you got to find a way to get home field advantage in these playoffs because the home field advantage is big, and especially on that championship game level. When you're in those 2 championship games, and both of them, they had to travel to Indy last year, and then they had to travel to Pittsburgh this year. So at some point, you have to get a home playoff game. You have to get a home playoff game. It's very important that you get a home playoff game because it's been shown the last 2 years, it's difficult to go on the road in these playoffs and win. And it's difficult to win on the road in a championship game. And the Jets, which are 2 hostile environments in Pittsburgh and Indianapolis, the last 2 years, they lost both times. So if you're the New York Jets, you got to find a way to get home field advantage in these playoffs and make sure that the championship game is running through the new Meadowlands Stadium instead of running through Heinz Field and instead of running through all these other stadiums. I mean, it takes a lot to beat the Colts in Indy. It takes a lot to beat the Patriots in Foxborough. I mean, and Sanchez was trying to pull off the hat trick and beat Big Ben in Pittsburgh. That's a lot. That's hard to do. And that was harder than Aaron Rodgers' run, in my opinion, who went through Pittsburgh. Went to Philadelphia, went to Atlanta, went to Chicago. Sanchez's run was harder. I'll say that. His run was definitely harder to do. But guess what? Guess what? Aaron Rodgers found a way to get it done, and Mark Sanchez and the Jets could not get it done, could not go through Indy. They got through Indy. They got through New England. But when it was time to beat the black and yellow Pittsburgh Steelers, they weren't able to do it. They were not able to do it. And I think it goes back to my point that you have to get at home. You have to get home field advantage in these playoffs. And you can't continue to go through all these different buildings and expect to get to the Super Bowl. You can't. I mean, it doesn't happen very often. It just does not happen.
Well, I know we're going to switch gears in a minute because we certainly want to talk about the other the other championship game, the NFC championship game. But you seem quite high on the Steelers, and before we cross over, you giving them the nod here, Paul?
I'm not prepared to do that at this point in time. And as I said to Corey, Almeida, if you look at it, the Green Bay Packers just have that look of destiny. I mean, you get the sense that destiny may be on their side. And I said, you know, if you look at it, the end of their regular season, essentially, the last few games of the regular season was a playoff for them. And you get into the playoffs and you go to Philly, beat Mike Vick. You go to Atlanta, beat Matty Ice, the number one seeded Atlanta Falcons, a team I really didn't believe in to begin with, but, I mean, that's another story. And they went into Chicago and beat the Chicago Bears. So they went through each and every team on the road, the sixth seed. They have the feel of Kelly, of Beyonce, of Michelle. They have the feel of Destiny's Child, definitely. But I'm not prepared to make that I'm not prepared to say that they will win next week. I'm not prepared to do it. Next week, tune in. I'll be prepared then. And are you prepared to make it a prediction at this point?
Well, I could say this. Well, yeah, actually, I am. We were talking about this, you know, before the show.
But don't give it to him now. Don't give it to him now.
Well, because we're going to switch gears anyway, and I think I'm going to start out and say this. I don't think the injury would have mattered. I think that's the burning question. You know, would the injury have mattered? And I don't think the injury would have mattered.
The
Green Bay Packers, Paul, the Green Bay Packers, like you said, they have, since the playoffs have started, they have looked like just a different team. And I think there does need to be, I think, a level, at least, you know, man-to-man, where we look at this and we say, to a certain degree, they have looked very sharp, period.
Definitely. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has been off the charts in these playoffs, and he's playing at a great level. I mean, three touchdowns against Philly and another three against the Atlanta Falcons and over 300 yards in that particular game. So he's playing like a guy who is in his own right now. He's in his own right now. He's just playing at an all-time level right now in these playoffs. He's playing. He's off the charts right now. He's definitely off the charts. So right now, you get the feel. But I will say this. Chicago was a good defense, and Aaron Rodgers wasn't super in that game. He did have two interceptions. This week, 2 weeks from now, next week, I should say, he's going up against a vaunted Pittsburgh Steelers defense. So it's not going to be the Falcons defense. It's not going to be the Philadelphia Eagles defense. It's going to be along the lines of what he saw in Chicago. So that's going to change things a little bit too. So that it should be interesting. But again, we'll make our picks next week because, you know, I'm not prepared to do that at this particular time. But we wanted to switch gears, like you said, to Jay Cutler and that whole situation. Jay Cutler, as we all know at this point, by this time, essentially, well, he stated that the team said he could not come back in. And at this point, it came out that he suffered a sprained MCL. And so he took himself out of the NFC Championship game. Once-in-a-lifetime situation, a situation that many don't get to, a situation that he may never get to again, an opportunity to go to the Super Bowl and some say it was just a no mas situation, and while others believe it was an injury situation. And I say this, if you tell me you're hurt, you're hurt. If Jeremy's telling me he has a stomach ache, guess what? He has a stomach ache. He can't go. He's hurt. If Jeremy's telling me he has a headache, and he has a headache, he can't go. That's the bottom line. I said this before. I said it again. This mentality, play till I die, I'm willing to die on the field. How many people you know is willing to die for their job?
How many people you know is willing to go to the office and die? How many people you know that's willing to do that?
Oh, I'll pause.
Not many.
I'm going to interrupt because I couldn't agree more. And further than that, there's a lot being made now because of the CBA and such, and I think you have to be as a player, you have to be realistic. And what I mean by that is let's keep this real. You call it a once in a lifetime, but A, it's not always once in a lifetime, and B, even if it is, what's more important to you? Something that's going to happen once in a lifetime, or something that's darn sure going to happen again in your future, which should be playing quarterback at an NFL level if you're a guy like Jay Cutler. At the end of the day, Paul, he gets paid to play football. He doesn't get paid just to play in the Super Bowl. And if you're injured, that's an important game, the NFC Championship. But what's more important is showing up for work every day, not showing up for work one day.
And you're right. I mean, yes, and ultimately it even goes to a larger issue. Yes, the Super Bowl was a once-in-a-lifetime deal, but guess what? Spending time with your family, walking around, being healthy, having a beautiful second half of your life is also it's not more than once-in-a-lifetime thing. You're talking about the whole second half of your life. So the whole second half of your life, you don't want to be all beat up, broke up, and relying on pain pills to get you from point A to point B. So this whole mentality of I'm going to die. And I'm not a football player. I never played it at this level, obviously. So I don't, you know. I mean, and we're going to bring Willie Wolf in and shortly, and he's going to kind of break that down and give us a perspective from a football player's point of view. But I'm not that. I've never played that. So it's kind of hard for me to say to get into that focus and that type of mentality. But I will say this. I mean, yes, you hear football players say from time to time, I'm going to die for this. I'm willing to die for this. Well, I'm not willing to die for my job. And again, like I said before, I know a lot of people that are not willing to die for their job. So,
but you know what, Paul? Too, you know, and I mean this, Paul. I thought it was, you know, I think it's totally classless, by the way, totally classless to say to or about an athlete, you know, that if you're not that player, to say that he should have been on the field is classless. I mean, let the guy who does, especially when you could very, I mean, there was no question watching the game that he was suffering from an injury. How severe of an injury was it? I don't think any of us are able to, quote unquote, judge that. But I can say this. I firmly believe, like you said, there's no job that a person should be dying for.
No.
Period.
No, I mean, no. Yes, no one should be dying for their job. No one should be dying for their job. But, I mean, at the same time, I mean, if you look at it, it's a select group of people that can play football. It's a select group of people. And so those select group of people, say what you will about that. Those select group of people are an amazing group. They're a group that obviously we can't reach and we can't be a part of. You can't discount exactly what they do. What they do is simply amazing. It's simply amazing. So with that being said, at the same time, no one should be dying for their job. No one should be dying for their job. And I understand you make a lot of money. I understand all the fame that comes with it. I understand the life, the big houses, fancy cars, and the pretty women, too, that come with playing football. But at the end of the day, it is a game. And as far as all the criticism for Jay Cutler, I think it's a little unfair. I mean, we have to keep in mind, this guy was sacked 52 times, the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. The most sacked quarterback in the NFL. And he found a way to stand up
until the NFC Championship game. So, I mean, to question his toughness, I think, is a little unfair. And speaking of toughness, we bring in now 2011 Hall of Fame finalist, 11-time Pro Bowl offensive tackle, Willie Roque. Willie, how are you, sir?
Doing good. How y'all doing today?
Hey, well, doing great. Doing great.
How's the weather, man? Y'all getting any good weather out there? Is it changing? Is it, y'all got another storm coming through?
I hope you're not trying to be fun of us out here, Willie. We're getting pounded, man. You know, put your jackets on and turn up the heat. And I wish we were out on the West Coast.
Yeah, y'all could have been on the West Coast. Like, when the Lakers got beat by Sacramento last night.
They did. Give Sacramento a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Dallas Bear played well yesterday.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I hear what you said about Jay Cutler, and I just think, it's a lot of criticism going that way, and you can't, you know, his teammates and the head coach can judge the toughness of the individual. I think some of his mannerisms and his attitude throughout his career has brought a lot of the criticism. I don't think it's what happened during that game. I think that's some of it, but I think it's just his reputation and the way he's handled certain situations when he left Denver and so on have been the issue with him and why people have an opinion about it.
And that's what I told Paul. I mean, that's one thing, Willie, that I was saying to Paul, that this is, unfortunately for Jay Cutler, what begets, you know, a guy that maybe talked a little too prematurely, in his career. He came into the league a very flamboyant player, a very opinionated guy, and so I think, you know, it was payback for him when he fell in an important game. I think some of his critics, while they're not able to, in my opinion, justify, they kicked him while he's down, but I guess in a way, when you're down, you're going to get kicked.
Yeah, Jeremy, and the fact that, you know, how bad a sprain is it? You know, could he or couldn't he gone in the game? And that's what they were saying, that a lot of, you know, Brett Favre, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, some of these guys, you know, would they have left the game and not tried to finish the game? And look at Brett Favre, I mean, this guy was getting the hell beat, you know, took a beating this year. And he still came back and tried to play something when he could have just shut it down late in the season. He could have just shut it down, and he still tried to come back and play. Not saying that it was the right choice for him to come back and play, but he was still trying to get out there and play when the season was over with. So, you know, the fact that it's the NFC Championship game and you're trying to get to a Super Bowl, which they went to one, a few years back and got beat by Indy, and other than that, you haven't won one since 1985, it would have been hard to see him, you know, it would have been better to see him try to go out there and make it through the game, but if he's hurt, he's hurt.
And Willie, what are your thoughts on some of the criticism that he's taken from some of the players on Twitter? Maurice Jones-Drew and a few others came out and criticized the guy. Did you think that was a little unfair?
I think that's a little unfair. You know, some guys criticize him on Twitter and making little comments. I mean, they're not in a situation that they, you know, they don't know how bad the man's hurt. You know, I know Jones-Drew personally. You know, I'm good friends with his roommate that was in college out here, Kyle Morgan, and, you know, Jones-Drew played hurt this year. And, you know, so I understand the guy, and I've come back off, I've heard the MCL and had a real tough third-degree sprain in 1996 and came back and finished the year. So, I mean, your knee, the stability in your knee does not feel right, and, you know, when it is sprained, you don't have to have surgery, but you're supposed to take a couple of weeks off for that. So it can be very painful. If it is more than a first, second degree sprain.
Go ahead, Paul. You're the man. I'm just living.
Willie, if you were put in that particular situation, NFC title game, sprained MCL, would you have finished the game? Would you find a way to finish the game through any type of pain medicine, any type of shots or anything? Would you have found a way to finish that game?
It matters how severe the sprain is. I mean, if it's a severe sprain, it's gonna be very painful, and it's gonna be tough to finish the game. You know, they have different degrees. I mean, doctors call it first, second, or third degrees. I mean, if it's a first degree sprain, they can put a brace on it and keep it stabilized. But the problem with it, if you do have a sprained MCL like that, and that's the same knee eventually my ACL gave out on, then if you're playing on a loose knee, you can tear other stuff up in there. So, you know, if it's playing pretty good and you go out there and that knee's still wobbling and unstable, you can tear your ACL. And I might have torn my ACL partially then, you know, because my knee used to click and lock for a couple of years, and then finally just gave out. So you can tear other stuff up when you have a sprain like that in your knee.
And that's one of the things that I was surprised the most about. It gets back to the more macro point that you had mentioned, that a lot of these players are very, you know, disenfranchised, if you will, with Jay Cutler, the man. Because to me, very clearly, most players know when a guy has a knee injury, oftentimes it's usually if they're out for a reason. They're not out because, especially in a game like that, they're not out because, hey, it's too cold to play. When it's your knee, it's usually not a that's not a good injury for a football player to have.
Well, no, it isn't. I mean, and like you said, you want to be precautious about a knee. And this is, you know, your quarterback, you know, their franchise. I mean, regardless of what people want to say, I mean, he played very good this year. And later, and I know he had some times when he didn't throw the ball as well. And later in the year, I mean, especially that one game he played, the one playoff game he played, he looked great. You know, he played outstanding in some games. So, you know, I think Jay Cutler is maturing, and I think he's got a lot of good football left in him. And if he can maybe change his persona a little bit, maybe, you know, that would take a little bit of the slack off him. But I mean, he's got to want to do that himself.
And we're talking to Willie Rowe, 2011 Hall of Fame finalist. And now, Willie, what was one of the worst injuries you ever played through?
I think the year when I left New Orleans before 2001, that same knee, my right knee, I was running the guy around the quarterback, and I felt it. It just popped, and I had a shot before the game, so I finished the game, and they drained a lot of blood off of it, but I kept going in and out of the lineup for about a month or to the end of November when I got hit on the knee. Because if guys know you're hurt, man, they, you know, you're out there trying to play, you know, guys, you know, they'll go out to you. So I finally went to Dr. Andrews. And when he went up my ACL, it was torn at the top. It wasn't torn in the middle. So when you looked on the MRI graph, it didn't, you know, it wasn't torn where you could see it. So it flipped off the bone, he said, and it was torn at the top. So I kept playing on it a little bit and was tearing my meniscus up some. See, that's what happens. You play on a bad knee, you're gonna do other damage. So I was tearing my meniscus up a little more. So they went in and repaired my meniscus, and then they had to fix the ACL. But it was painful trying to play, and your knees kind of buckling, and it doesn't feel stable. But, you know, I never tore an ACL, so I didn't know what it was. I just knew something was wrong, you know, and I knew it wasn't feeling right. But like you said, man, you know, if you can play, or if they don't know exactly what's wrong with you, you know, you're gonna get out there and keep playing on the game, trying to play and make it through. That's just the mentality of a lot of football players, and that's what the guys are talking about. That a lot of guys sacrifice their body for the team, and you know, we have that mindset, but sometimes you can go too far.
And do you think at this point, I mean, the notion of, you hear guys saying all the time, I'm willing to die for this. Do you think that notion in 2011 is something that we should try to get away from?
Well, I think I think in professional sports and what the money guys are making and with that job, I mean, that is your occupation, you're not going to really get away from it all the time. I think the problem is now, you know, with these kids in sports and the way these parents are pushing these kids and these kids are getting hurt and you know, they're getting, you know, I think they're pushing these kids to do too much in organized sports at too young an age, and a lot of these kids are getting hurt at a young age. By the time they're done with high school, they're beat up and their bodies are banged up because the parents want these kids to be these athletes and to do all this stuff and push these kids so much. So I don't really look as much as when you're a pro because, you know, that's your job and that's the doctor's job to protect guys and the team's job to protect guys as much as they can. You know they're going to protect their investment in the guy. And if you can play, you're going to get on the field and play. But I think it's the way they're pushing these kids and these parents and these little league teams and some of the stories I hear about them. And, you know, I mean, you're a kid. You're supposed to have fun and enjoy. You're not supposed to try to make these kids do it like a job at a young age.
Hey, well, with the new CBA, you're not playing now, but if you were and you were a player, with all the concussion talk and especially with the injuries and the knees, is this something that they really should be pushing more, me and the players, the fact that there should be some forms of protocols saying to protect them and to certainly protect the fact that, you know, these contracts aren't guaranteed and we don't know what the CBA is going to come. Should they, in terms of in that game, if you go out and you're diagnosed with this type of injury, you're not allowed back in the game?
Well, the only time they're going to do that is if it's a concussion or a head injury. I mean, what they're going to do is you're going to go on that sideline and they're going to put you through some tests to check the stability of your knee. And if they don't think your ACL is torn, you know, if you have a torn MCL and they think they can put a brace on it and stabilize it, then they might put you back in the game. It just matters how severe or how bad they think the knee injury is. Now, if it's hurting too much, then you're not going to get in the game. But if you go on the sideline, and it's up to the player's discretion, if the player wants to try to go in and give it a go again, and the doctors think they can put a knee brace on, and they don't think it's that serious where he has to sit out the game, then they're going to put him back in the game.
And now, Willie, we're looking back at championship weekend. I want to look more specifically at Mark Sanchez and the Jets. I mean, Willie, the second year in a row, the Jets got this far to the championship game. Both times on the road, they lost to the Colts last year. They lose to the Steelers now this year. Mark Sanchez had a poor first half, and he played well in the second half, but it wasn't enough. Do you think, and I think the Jets are a championship-caliber defense, they have a championship-caliber defense, I think the coaching is in place. Do you think Mark Sanchez is the guy that's holding this thing back?
I don't feel Sanchez is holding it back. I mean, I think, do you think about it? It was going to be tough for them. They went into Indy and beat Indy. Then they go into New England and beat New England at home. And Sanchez played very good in that game. I just think they ran into a tough defense that would not allow them to run the football. And with Mark Sanchez, you have to let him run the football, let him set up the play action, let him do the little dump passes and get in the rhythm, and then get going. Well, they didn't allow that offense to get in any type of rhythm in the first half, and they shut the running game down. When they shut the running game down, they put all the pressure on Sanchez. And he's not that type of quarterback that's going to go out there and like Peyton and like Drew Brees and some of these guys, Tom Brady, and just light it up. He's a guy that you let him dump and dink the ball, throw some screen passes, and then you let him go down the field later after he gets in the type of rhythm. So, you know, you got to look at the type of quarterback you have. So I think Sanchez is maturing as a quarterback. I just think Pittsburgh's defense did a good job of shutting that offense down and didn't let him get going in the first half.
And now, Willie, if you look at it, You talked about the lack of a running game. You talked about Sanchez being forced to make plays. Wouldn't you say being a part of that, being the championship quarterback, a part of that is having to make plays when it's time to make plays?
Yes, he had to make plays when he had to make plays, and you know he had, you know, I know he had some bad throws, and but in the first half, I mean, he wasn't making plays. Wasn't nobody making plays. I mean, Pittsburgh jumped on him, jumped on the whole team early in that game. In the second half, they did make plays, and then I mean, when he's getting hit trying to throw the ball, that wasn't. I mean, if his arm almost was going forward, but I think the key point in the game that really took them out of that ball game was when he fumbled that ball and when they scored that touchdown. I think if that play doesn't happen right there, I think they still have a chance to win that game.
That definitely was a big play in that particular football game. You're definitely right. But it couldn't be a situation, but, I mean, in the NFL, windows close fast. I mean, you've been to the AFC title game now these last two seasons. Sanchez definitely will get better. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback. But there are no guarantees at this point in terms of the defense will still be as good as it was this year in the past 2 years.
Well, the other issue going on with them also is you got Braylon Edwards who's up this year. You got Cromartie who's up this year. You got Santonio Holmes who's up this year. All these guys are going to want to get paid. They're not going to be able to keep all these guys. So the problem is, how many of those guys are going to be back on the team next year? Well, we'll see what the labor deal, what's going to happen with the labor deal. But how many of those guys are they going to be able to sign back?
Well, wait a minute. I hate to interrupt you, but I mean, let's keep it real. Braylon Edwards, if they want Braylon Edwards, they're going to get him very cheap, very affordable. Because I just said to Paul right before you came on, he is of all the players on that team has come up the smallest in his entire A career. And B, certainly this year with the Jets. He had, I thought, a horrible – he was non-existent this year. Teller had a better year, I thought, than he did. So they're going to be able to keep him. I think, you know, if they want him, they can keep him. Cromartie, I don't disagree with you. I think he again showed that he's a feature corner in this league.
Well, yeah, I think Cromartie's going to get paid. But in Braylon's case, I mean, Braylon made a lot of big plays this year. But you got Santonio Holmes on the other side from him. And if the quarterback's not getting him the ball, I agree that he didn't make all the big plays that he and he hadn't really had but one outstanding year. The year the Cleveland had a great year and he went to the Pro Bowl. But I do think Braylon is still the number one receiver. I don't think. Braylon was a top 10 pick. So this guy's going to be looking to get some money. Now, what are you going to do with Santonio Holmes? Who do you pay? I mean, cause I don't think they're going to be able to get Braylon for $2 or $3 million. I think somebody would offer Braylon more than that because he's still a young receiver with a lot of talent, and he's big.
Well, I'm going to play here, but you have to remember, he has a lot of talent, Willie, but in a league where his talent now has definitely been overshadowed by his stupidity, by the fact that he's now known for his off-the-field play more than his on-the-field play, and he's not Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger had that happen to him, but he goes out after a four-game suspension and has, you know, one heck of a year. Edwards has himself some trouble, and sure, played well, made some plays, but again, was way overshadowed by the receiver that lines up on the other side of the field from him, Santonio Holmes. So is he going to get that much attention from other teams in the league? Yeah, maybe teams like Cleveland, but who wants to play for Cleveland?
I disagree. I think he will get attention this year. I mean, and I agree with Willie. He is a big wide receiver, and he has made some plays. He has made plays this year. And if you remember the let's look at the New England game. He made a big play in that game.
He showed his
physicality in that particular game where he just dragged some guys into the end zone with him. I like Braylon Edwards, but I think some of the off-the-field things do overshadow him, unfortunately. But I like this guy.
Not in a league, Paul, run by this commissioner who has made it too well known you are not going to play in his league when you're on the front page of your town's newspapers. The teams that he will garner interest from will also have heavy debate on can they afford to give this guy a chance, whether they get their money or not. No team in this league wants to make mistakes on players now. And Willie, I think you better than anybody especially being away from the game but having contacts in the league, teams now are all too sensitive to signing these players, whether young or old, and losing them to suspensions because it's a roster spot. And a guy like a Braylon Edwards is a big-time roster spot, a wide receiver who where you could have – that's a team that could have signed Santonio Holmes, but they take a chance on a Braylon Edwards. And so Santonio Holmes, you know, is going to – if he does, if he comes out of the same mold of this off-the-field stuff, was he a good who was a better investment? If you look at the Jets now, if you're out there of the other 31 teams and the Jets, if you're going to go after a wide receiver that had a checkered past, well, you have Braylon Edwards and you have Santonio Holmes. If you're a GM on the other 31 teams, Santonio Holmes proves he gets right back on the field after suspension and has an all-pro year. Braylon Edwards did not have an all-pro year.
Well, yeah, but Braylon Edwards made a lot of big plays, too, to win some games for him, too, though, Jeremy. During the season, Braylon Edwards made some big plays, some big catches that helped them win some games. I mean, this guy was productive enough to help that team make it to the AFC Championship game. I mean, Santonio Holmes made big plays, but it's both of them because if you double one or put a safety over the top on one, then the other one's going to beat you. So, I mean, I think both of them did what they had to do and did good enough to help a team get to the AFC Championship. So how can you say that Brandon Edwards wasn't productive this year when he caught a bunch of big passes and he was their go-to threat? I like big receivers. So Brandon doesn't want to go play for a team that's not going to be a contender, I mean, unless they're going to throw a lot of money at him. So you're right. So if a team wants Brandon Edwards and they're trying to build, put some players around the quarterback, and they're going to throw some money at him, how old is Brandon Edwards? He's been in the league, what, 4 or 5 years? I mean, the guy's still very young. He's got a lot of talent. And, you know, and I think that he should have matured from his experiences, and he should be a pro by now. Now if he has to go somewhere and sign a 1-year deal to prove that he is going to be a pro, then he has to do that. And I agree with you. I'm not going to throw a lot of money at him, but I will put some incentives in it. And if he stays clean, because Santonio Holmes got in some trouble too. You forgot about that. So both of them, you can't give both of them a lot of money because you don't know what either one of them are going to do.
And Braylon Edwards has been in the league for 7 years now, and 6 years now, excuse me. And he's only 27 years old, so he's in the prime of his career. He's big, he's tough, he has some speed. I think he has some playmaking ability, but I think if they may have to choose between one or the other, and I think I would pick Santonio Holmes if it came down to that.
But, Paul, that's one of the things that I want to establish is that in this league now, players are being compared in terms, and they're being, whether it's right or wrong, I mean, they're being stereotyped by their off the field issues.
Yes, as Willie pointed out, and as we all know, Santonio Holmes was suspended for the first 4 games of the season, and it wasn't for good behavior. So
Paul,
he has his issues as well.
But Paul, he comes back into the league, does not. Make you don't even know if you're not, in my opinion, if this was the second or third year you're following sport, not a learned football fanatic, all you know about Santonio Holmes is that guy can catch the football. You're not, I mean, the broadcasters decide who make it well known, but Braylon Edwards keeps his name on the front page of ESPN.com because he's in court every other month.
Santonio Holmes did too. Santonio Holmes did too.
But Paul, after he got in trouble, he cleaned himself up. Braylon Edwards, this is the third. Now Braylon Edwards is about to be the Santonio Holmes. That's my point. Santonio got himself in trouble before, you know, he hits the big payday. Braylon Edwards
in fairness to Braylon Edwards, he is innocent until proven guilty.
He's innocent until proven guilty.
Now we all understand that. we know how the league is now, and we know how the commissioner operates. We all understand that, Jeremy. All I'm saying is, if Braylon Edwards is a good enough receiver and has a lot of talent to get some attention this offseason, and somebody will give this kid some money, because by now, you've been in the league 6 years, you should understand what you got to do and what you can't do. And I doubt if Braylon is going to put himself in a situation where he's going to get in any more trouble. Now, I think the DUI situation was it just was dumb. It just wasn't smart. And at that time, they had a every week. It seemed like the Jets were had something going on with the coach and his wife's feet and all this craziness. So I'm saying that we understand and they understand that they're gonna try to get him for cheaper. But I think that they're both gonna want number one receiver money, which the going rate for number one receiver right now is anywhere between $8 and $10 million a year. So I don't think either one, from what happened last year, are gonna get $9-10 million a year from the Jets. I don't think either one will get that. No, I think the Jets might keep him in the 4 or 5 range, maybe 6 range for him. But I don't think the Jets can afford to pay him, $8-9 million a year.
And I think it's going to come down. They're going to have to make a decision between them, one or the other, I think. And also with Cromartie, that's also another big decision for the New York Jets. But I think it's all going to come down to what happens with the CBA. And as of right now, we don't know what's going to happen with that. And that situation is up in the air. But hopefully they'll get that thing taken care of. I mean, they have to get it taken care of. I mean, all the money that the NFL is making right now and all the ratings that it's getting on TV, I mean – they have to take care of this situation, and we'll see how this whole thing sorts out, but hopefully they'll get it taken care of. Now, Willie, there's some big news, hopefully, for you coming up next week. You and a few others are 2011 finalists for the Hall of Fame. Willie, as the day draws near now, is there any nervousness as this day comes near now?
Yes, there's nervousness, and I'm looking forward to it. And it's like the guy, like Jerome Bettis and some of the guys since the Steelers are playing in the Super Bowl, they're going to town. But the rest of us we're on standby. So I'm waiting, and Saturday if I get the call, me and my cousin we're flying down. They're bringing us in, and we go out for the football game and do stuff for the football game Sunday, but we're on standby because they can't fly all of us in. So it's a lot of nervousness and anticipation, whether you got your bags packed, whether you're flying down for the game or you're not going to be able to do it this year. So it's good nervousness. It's not bad nervousness, but
right.
Just to be in this category, on my first year, it's a good sign to be waiting to get a call.
Are the bags packed?
Well, they don't do the voting until next Saturday. Next Saturday, they will be packed, just in case I got to get to the airport by 6 o'clock. Because we don't get to go unless you get announced. So I got to wait for them to call me and give me the call and let me know yay or nay.
And what time would I noticed the show on NFL Network is at 7 o'clock, but you guys probably will get the call before that, correct?
Yeah, I think we'll get the call sometime in the early afternoon, because if I get the call, I have a 6 o'clock flight that gets in to Dallas at like 11 o'clock.
Okay. And then right now, I mean, it's going to be tight, but like you said, this is the first time around for you, and I mean, to be a first ballot Hall of Famer would be a great, great honor.
That would be a great honor, and like I said, I know that it's going to be tight. 5 of us are getting in, and you got a lot of outstanding players. It's a tough list. You got Jerome, you got Marshall and Dion and Haley, and you got Chris Carter and Shannon Sharp that have both been waiting for 3 years. This is their third year on the ballot. And I think those two guys are two of the better players to ever play at their position, I mean, by far. And you got Andre Reed, who's been there for a while, but I don't You got Charles Haley and Richard Dent. But I don't think Andre Reed was an outstanding player. Played on good teams, but, you know, Chris Carter and Shannon Sharp both have been waiting for a while.
And so, Willie, you know, we have the list here. That is, like you said, Tim Brown, Shannon Sharp, Richard Dent, Dermoni Dawson, Chris Dolman, Marshall Faulk, Charles Haley, and a few others, Curtis Martin, like you said, Andre Reed. You had to pick five. And it's going to be tough. It's maybe an unfair question. But if Willie Rofe was on the Hall of Fame committee and had to pick five, what five would you choose?
I can name two of them. And I know Jerome and I are good friends. I think Deion Sanders is maybe the best cover corner to ever play the game. He played offense and defense, was obviously one of the better athletes to play. You know, I think Deion and Marshall Faulk, for what he did with that team with the Rams and his body of work as a career, are both going in. After that, you know, you're going to go take one D lineman out of that group. So you got Cortez Kennedy in that group too. So, you know, is it Dolman, Dent, or Haley? I think it comes down to one of those three that you're going to take for that other spot. And I think for the fourth spot, you know, Tim Brown or Chris Carter or Shannon Sharp. I mean, you got to put the tight end in with the receiver. So you're going to take, I think you're going to have to put in a receiver. Andre Reed, you got to put in a receiver. I think Deion and Marshall are locks. I think you got to put a D lineman in, and I think you got to put a receiver in out of those guys. And then I don't know if you put two receivers in because you got guys waiting, or you throw an offensive lineman, me and Damonte, in that group. So I think it's going to come down to, you know, which running back goes in, which receiver tight end slash tight end goes in, and which D lineman you put in that group.
Right. So, I mean, I
think... Well, what do you think? What's your five? Give me, what are your five? You give me your five.
I'll start with Chris Carter. I think Chris Carter deserves to get in first ballot. I think he had a very good career. So I would go with Chris Carter, Marshall Faulk, Deion Sanders. And in terms of running backs, I mean, obviously I picked Marshall Faulk, but in terms of if we're going to do it the way you said it, Willie, in terms of offensive linemen, I think I would pick Willie Rowe. In terms of the last one, and again, we get five, in terms of the last one, I think I would put in Jerome Bettis as well.
Yeah, but you're going to put in Jerome Bettis, and you're not going to put in one of those D linemen? That's, you know,
well,
what I mean?
I'm going to go Haley, Bettis, Faulk, Sanders, and Rofe.
Yeah, but if you're going to go Haley, you got to take Chris Carter out, though.
I'm sorry. I would go with Carter, Haley, Rofe, Sanders, and Faulk.
You said it right the first time, Paul, by leaving out Carter. He's getting in, don't get me wrong, but Chris Carter he had a Hall of Fame career, but not a first ballot Hall of Fame. And the reason you say that is he caught touchdowns and had a great career, but...
Well, this is 30-year-old ballot.
Paul, but during his tenure in the NFL, Chris Carter was not the predominant wide receiver. He was he's a Hall of Famer because of the breadth of his work. So he's going to get in. But that's the hard part, in my opinion, of wide receivers. You know, there were, in my opinion, overall, in terms of Hall of Fame, there were better wide receivers out there than Chris Carter. Breadth of work, I do think when you do look at him, but again, this is a tough year. This is Chris Carter's problem, in my opinion, is when you don't get in, and I think everyone knows this, when you don't get in, it doesn't get easier. It gets harder.
You're right, it does get harder. And that's what I'm saying. It's a very tough class. But like Pastor, I mean, Chris Carter's one of the better players, and this is his third year. Now, guys, does it get down to Chris Carter and Shannon Sharpe's reputation with the media and their mouth some of the time, is that the reason that they're not getting in, or is it the numbers they did on the field? Just like we talked about T.O. whenever he tried to hang up the cleats. What is the reason that Chris Carter and Shannon Sharp aren't getting in? Is it because of the body of work, or is it because of the media's perception of what some they rub some guys the wrong way over the course of their career?
And there's a lot of politics involved and with this whole selection as well. Too much politics, if you ask me. So, yes, it may come down to that. It may come down to a Chris Carter who's been outspoken. Chris Carter has had some off-field problems earlier in his career, and a guy like Shannon Sharp who was also very outspoken. So you're right. I mean, I like to think Chris Carter gets in this time around. I mean, his body of work, it kind of speaks for itself in terms of the numbers that he put up. And I just like to think he will get in. I think he'll get in this time. I really do. And I just like Chris Carter to get in. I think it's his time.
And I'll tell you guys this. And myself, Jerome, and guys included, if they put some guys in that you know were great football players, we played against Chris Carter and Shannon a lot, and you know you got guys that have been waiting around, like some guys that I feel like Shannon Sharp, you know, look what he did in the playoffs. Look what he did, you know, third down, that was Elway's go-to guy. On that Baltimore Super Bowl team, you know, he was that big receiver. He had some big games in the playoffs for them. So if I see some guys like that go in and some outstanding football players, and I don't go in, you know, hats off to him. Andre Reed, you know, played on four Super Bowl teams. They didn't win them, but he was their go-to receiver on all those Super Bowl teams. You know, guys like that were outstanding football players in that time period. And I think, like you said, the longer it goes by, the more their stature and what they did gets kind of brushed away, because every year goes by and you got new guys coming up and they're like, oh, look at this guy, look what he did, you know. And they kind of brush these guys to the side, you know. And it's a tough, you know, it's really a tough call, you know. And you got to be happy for whoever they put in, because all these guys, the final 15, are obviously some outstanding football players. And you got Kevin Green, who didn't make the final 15 list, who I feel like was one of the better players, you know, in the league.
Right.
You know, reminds me of what Ricky Jackson was. You know, Kevin Green was a tough, hard-nosed guy, played the run in the pass. You know, we played on the rush to right tackle all the time. But, I mean, he was a tough football player. He was a hell of a football player, you know, for the Steelers and for the Carolina and for all those teams he played for.
And real quickly, ESPN.com did an investigation on the use of painkillers and pain pills in the NFL, and some of their findings, 62% of retired players said they used prescription pain medication during their playing days, 71% acknowledged that they misused them, and 15% misusers acknowledged that misusing the medication within 30 days. Looking at some of these numbers, 52% of the players saying that they've used pain pills during their playing days, and 71% saying they misused them. I mean, are those numbers surprising to you? I know we talked about this on a previous show, but looking at these numbers and looking at those percentages, is it really surprising?
No, it's not surprising. I will say this, that, you know, I mean, I took some Vicodin when I played also, but you know, not to the extent of taking, you know, maybe more than one or two pills in a day. I mean, I wasn't one of those guys that was just popping 100, you know, all those pills like these guys are talking about. I heard the guy's story the other day, too. I just feel, man, it's a tough sport. And I told you, man, you take the Toradol shots before the game. You take the anti-inflammatory, you know, outside of the painkillers. You know, they're not talking about the anti-inflammatories that you're taking, the Celebrex, Vioxx at the time, and all these, and Indocin. You know, you're popping Indocin, you're popping painkillers. I mean, I know guys that play, especially in the line, all the banging you do every week, that were taking all these painkillers every week just to go to practice, you know. We're not even talking about games. We're talking about just to get out of bed and make it through the week's practice. Now, I was fortunate enough where, you know, I didn't have to take a lot of stuff like that throughout my career. And, you know, I felt it more the last couple of years. And when, you know, if you were feeling bad during practice, the trainer had Tylenol right there. So, you know, you didn't have to take Vicodin if some guys had their own prescription. But you go to the trainer and tell them, look, I need a couple Tylenols to get through practice. So he gave it to you right there on the field, and, you know, you do what you got to do to get through the week, you know, as far as, because I didn't want to take the stuff all week. So I waited till after Wednesday's practice before I started taking the anti-inflammatory, and then, you know, before the game, you're going to probably take a Toradol shot. So that's the way I tried to regiment mine, but, you know, like you said, a lot of guys have to, you know, no matter how bad they were hurt, they had to do what they had to do to make it through the league. And it's hard to, that's why I tell you, they need to have a program set up for these guys that have issues to at least give them an opportunity to call and get some help on their dependency, because a lot of guys get addicted to a lot of stuff when they're playing these sports, when playing football. And once you finish playing and they're done with you, it's like, okay, bye-bye. You know, you've been doing all this for your whole life to keep playing sports, and then you just gonna cut it cold turkey, man. It's hard, and your body's not gonna be feeling it. You think your body. Some people say, well, you give your body a couple of years, it's gonna feel better. Well, a lot of these guys' body it's not feeling better; it's feeling worse. So, what are they supposed to do? I mean, they got to do something so they can get up, and move around every day if they don't feel good.
Is there any problems with you getting around on a daily basis?
Well, you know, I mean, I still get my massages. I still go to the chiropractor. I still get my cardio in. I still move around and trying to, you know, I'm still around my playing side, trying to get some weight off and trying to keep my body active. Now, if you don't move around and go to the, I'm probably going to go do some cardio today when we get off this phone. If I don't go to the gym and get, move around and stretch and do my cardio and do my steam and do the stuff that I did when I was playing, then I'm going to have some problems, and I already know that. Then I'm going to stiffen up and have some issues. But if I keep, you got to, it's like that motor, like a car. You got to keep it moving. If I keep the body moving and doing what I got to do, and a lot of guys are hurting where they can't even get around good, so I've been blessed that I'm not hurting like that. But if I don't keep my body moving and keep it like everybody else is getting older, then I am going to have some more issues.
Well, but Willie, and one of the things you talk about keeping moving, but you were smart in that, and you had mentioned this a couple of times back on the show, you didn't play too long when you recognized that it was on the slopier part of the hill rather than the up climb or the level playing surface. Too many of these players, in my opinion, you talk about taking the Toradol shots, and you well know, the more you take, the more you're going to need. And so when you're at the down part of your career playing for money, essentially, which I don't – we're not here to say it's a bad thing to play for money, but certainly recognizing that that's where, as a player, you're going to do the most damage to your body, period.
Yeah, but you got guys that are coming into the league, their bodies are banged up from college. I mean, maybe they had some major injuries when they were young in their career. Maybe they're not invested yet. I mean, it just matters what stage you're at with your body. I was fortunate enough to come in the league feeling very good and play, you know, in college, didn't really have any injuries, you know, and came into the league. And when I looked at these guys, I'm like, man, what are y'all doing? They're going to get massages. They're going to the chiropractor. Well, you know, my first 5-6 years, I didn't have to do it. You know what I mean? I was able to play football and go home and work out and didn't start feeling it. Now, when you've been in the league 6-7 years and you've been playing a whole bunch of football, obviously, you know, you're going to start feeling it. Well, you got guys that are playing at these big, big programs that are doing all this banging in the SEC and playing this type of football. You know, their bodies are hurting more when they come out of college than yours is hurting. So,
well,
you know, three or four years in, they're trying to get to 7-8. They're trying to get vested and trying to get their pension, and they're trying to stay around the league just to play for 8, 9, 10 years. You know, I was fortunate enough to be able to play longer before I needed to start doing more stuff than a lot of guys do when they come in the league.
No, you hit a big. I couldn't agree more. The fact in this league, you know, the college level, there is a big. You look at a guy like Dan Morgan, for example. You could go on and on and on of players who they get into the league and they really have no theoretical shot of being, you know, long-term successful because they're one injury away in the NFL from their career being over because, like you said, the colleges now are basically the minor league to the pros. I mean, it's not – you don't go to college to a big-time program, play football for an education. You go to college to get into the NFL.
And you that was happening when I was at Louisiana Tech. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're playing football first, and your education second. So you know what's going on at Ohio State and USC and all these major programs, and that's where the dilemma comes in: do you pay these guys or not? And you know, it's a tough debate. And like you said, a lot of these guys are sacrificing their bodies in college. I mean, you got a lot of guys that were great college players, and they get to the NFL and they're really banged up. And we're talking about NFL guys. We're not talking about the college guys that are taking all these painkillers and stuff too, just to make it to play in college every year. It's been some outstanding football players that have sacrificed their bodies from playing football since they're little kids, and by the time they get out of college, they're beat up. So what about those guys also? We're talking about NFL guys because they played in NFL guys. We're not talking about the guys that really gave their body to college football. They got to go and try to get a job and do stuff, and a lot of them can't get around good from college.
And I think that's a fair and interesting – that's a great point. I mean, even you talk about high school. I mean, you talk about beating your body up from high school all the way through, and you're right. I mean, football is football. It is physical on all levels. So you're right in terms of guys who couldn't make it to the next level – but are beat up because of their college days. I mean, that's a fair and interesting point. Hopefully they took advantage of the education in front of them, hopefully. But not all guys do, like you pointed out. Real quick, Super Bowl next week. We didn't really dig deep into it, but do you have a prediction at this point? I haven't given a prediction yet. We're still holding off, but if you have it, fine. If not, no big deal. We still have a week left.
We have a week left? You know what? I'll go out on a limb and say, I know that Big Ben and the Steelers have the experience. I don't know if they gave the spread to Green Bay, but I think Pittsburgh has the experience. But I think I got to take, you know, the way Aaron Rodgers is playing in Green Bay, Mike McCarthy was my old offensive coordinator when I was with the Saints, so I'm going for the upset. I think it'll be an upset, and I'm taking Green Bay.
All right, Will is going to go with Green Bay, and definitely will be an interesting Super Bowl and an interesting week for you, Willie. I mean, hopefully everything works out for you next week, sir, and good luck to you in that whole process. You'll know by next Saturday, and we hope everything works out for you.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
Thank you, Willie.
Take care, Will.
Take care of yourself.
All right.
Willie Rowe, 11-time Pro Bowler, Hall of Fame finalist. And so we'll definitely see what happens next Saturday. I believe the announcement's at 7 o'clock Eastern Time on NFL Network. So we'll get the announcement then. Whether or not Willie will become a first-ballot Hall of Famer, I mean, 11-time Pro Bowler, I mean, a great career. And so we'll definitely see what happens with that, and it should be very interesting. So we got another 7 minutes left, and I wanted to move on to the big fight tonight. A guy who's been on this show numerous times, Devin Alexander, against Timothy Bradley tonight in Detroit at the Superdome. Actually, that's Pontiac, Michigan, but at the Superdome. And it's going to be a big fight for supremacy at junior welterweight division, 140 pounds. And it's a big fight for Devin Alexander and Timothy Bradley. Both of these guys are undefeated, and both of these guys are hungry, and both of these guys want to move up and move on to bigger and better things, to the Pacquiao's of the world. And right now, this is going to be a big-time fight. And like I said, Devin Alexander has been on the show 3-4 times, and so we're definitely guys who are, I'm going to try to stay objective in this fight,
But I mean, I having Devin on the show, he's a charismatic guy. He's a nice guy. He's a humble guy, and he's a guy that gets it, I think. And I think it's going to be a great fight tonight in Michigan. Any thoughts on this fight tonight, Jeremy?
Well, I think, you know, we spoke to him many times, and this to date, the last fight he fought, and he came on right after, and he explained, you know, it got the butterflies out. He was in his hometown. It was difficult for him to go back and fight there and stay productive. This, I think, again, is a different big fight for him. I think going through that experience and also recognizing this is his big opportunity, and I don't think he's going to be able to lose this fight in terms of being knocked out. The only way he's going to lose this fight again, I think, is nerves. If he doesn't fight the fight Devin Alexander wants to fight, if he stays within himself, and I actually think he will win, I think he's going to learn from his mistakes from the last fight. He's too young, and I think we talked about that the last time he was on with us, is that he's a young fighter, and a lot of his growing pains – his growing pains are not his abilities. His growing pains are youth. And you know, that's tough for any athlete or any, especially a fighter. But I think going through his last experience and knowing what's at stake here, I think you're going to watch him fight maybe conservatively, but certainly fight effectively.
And I just think right now going into this fight, I mean, this is a big fight for Timothy Bradley as well. And Bradley's a hungry, hard-working, tough guy. He's tough. He's a tough fighter. In this last fight, he fought at 147. He was impressive at 147. Now he's going back to 140 and fighting this. I mean, this is big. I mean, this is a very big fight. This is a big fight between two American fighters. I mean, two African-American fighters. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, if you look at the sport of boxing, the way it's going right now, you have Pacquiao, Filipino, the Klitschko brothers on the heavyweights. I mean, they're Europeans, Ukrainians. And so, right now, the landscape for American fighters is not a lot out there, and a lot of exciting and prominent American fighters. And though this is a big opportunity for Bradley or Alexander, and it could be both of them, depending on how both of them will fight tonight. I mean, if it's a big, tough, dragon-ice slugfest between these two, and it goes the distance or whatnot, I mean, both of these guys will still benefit from this. And you know, there's talk of Amir Khan being next for the winner, and there's talk that Marcos Maidana would be for the loser of this particular fight. But Devin Alexander, young, 23 years old, Timothy Bradley, 27 years old, and again, this is the biggest fight of both of their careers, and this is going to be a big opportunity for either one of these guys. I mean, now you're the sky's the limit, and there's a lot of money there at the end of the rainbow for the victor of this fight. Even a loser of this fight will make out well, depending on how they lose. But I still think even a loser may still make out well in this fight. And especially Devin, who's only 23 years old at this point. But it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. HBO is really pushing this fight. And so it's going to be a great fight. I'm looking forward to it. Again, hard for me to be objective here because Devin has been on this show numerous times, and because of how I feel about the guy, how humble he has been each and every time he's come on, and just the stuff that he overcame in his life. I'm thinking Devin Alexander tonight by decision, split decision, in a close, tough fight. I think Devin gets a nod, and I think Devin is going to be on top of the junior welterweight division there for tonight. That's how I see it, but again, there's a level of bias coming from me here. But again, I like Devin tonight.
No, I mean, I think we're both, as we said, Paul, we certainly both have to say we enjoyed speaking to Devin. We enjoyed getting to know him and as a person. But also, I agree with you. I think this is today. Well, this is his big fight. I mean, and he's been, it's certainly entitled, you know, to make his mark in boxing. And I think I'm sure his promoters and he know what's at stake here, all too well.
Definitely. We look forward to that fight tonight. We want to thank Corey Almeida for stopping by. Corey's the host of Picture Rica on the Hub Network. And Corey also is the warm-up host for Dancing with the Stars and American Idol. We want to thank Corey for stopping by.
good luck to him and his Steelers. And make sure you follow Corey at Corey Live on Twitter. And also, we want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by. And maybe big news for him next Saturday, as he's a finalist for the 2011 Hall of Fame. So that should be big news and a big situation for him. And we want to thank those guys, Willie Rowe, Corey Almeida, for stopping by. We want to thank everybody for listening. Again, you can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/vegan. And make sure you follow us on Twitter at Go4Gant. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. Hope you enjoy this, because we enjoy bringing it to you. Have a great day. See you later. And as always...